Fang Bang.
Hello and welcome to Fang Bangers Podcast. We're chaotic horny friends rewatching the chaotic horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Lottie. This week we're discussing Season 2, Episode 5, Never Let Me Go. This episode originally aired on July 19th, 2009. It was written by Nancy Oliver and directed by John Dahl.
As always, we have this time an unedited summary from Wiki, even though it is quite wordy, so I apologize. Still in Dallas with Bill and Jessica, Sookie is intent on keeping her part of the bargain and trying to find the missing Godric despite the strange behavior of his cohorts. Eric tells Bill his true reason for wanting to find Godric. Sookie tries to learn more from the bellhop who has telepathic powers. Back in Bon Tom, most are still recovering from the effects of Tara's birthday party. Sam learns that he and Daphne have more in common than he could have imagined. Marianne announces that she is moving into Sookie's house, and when told that she can't, casts a spell on Tara to get her to change her mind. Over at the Light of Day Institute, Jason continues to impress with his leadership skills. Fed up with husband Steve's lack of attention and respect, however, Sarah Newland decides to spend a little private time with Jason.
She sure does.
This is an incredible Anna Camp episode.
Truly, as they all are. I mean, what a legend. True. So what were your first impressions?
It's that I watched episode 4 kind of thinking that it was episode 5. I just wasn't really paying attention. So when I turned around and then put episode 5 right back on, I then started having sort of a difficult time separating the events of the two episodes. And it just felt like one really long episode. And I definitely don't mean that as a complaint, because we're sort of in the middle of the season, so we're just smoothly moving through these plots. And it was a nice experience. I had a good time with my 2 hours of True Blood this week.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a sort of morning after from the orgy the night before at Tara's party. So, yeah, I agree. I think it feels like the second part of a two-parter, but more just serialized storytelling, really. A little bit quieter. Mm-hmm. Moved a lot of things around rather than move them in and out of each other. Although that happened too. It was still actually a very horny episode.
Yes, it certainly was. So we're going to start. We're going to talk about the party people, the people at the party, and the people subjected to being around the people that were at the party. We find out that Daphne is a shifter. Gasp. So really, she has like two intrigues going on, because she has these scars and she can turn into animals.
Specifically, we see her turn into a deer, a female deer. And she looked like a little cute little deer, I thought. And then she shifts back and has massive scars racked down her back. She doesn't have those scars as a deer, though, so maybe...
She doesn't. That's interesting.
Maybe
that's... I caught up with my reading as well.
Oh, okay.
And we find out in this section of the book that Sookie actually has the scars, too. So whatever association, I don't know if the scars are just to signify an association or if they leave Daphne with some connection to Marianne. If that's true, then that is something we might find out was true for Sookie in the book that isn't true here. And I just think that's interesting.
Well, Sookie gets fully healed, right?
Yeah.
So she doesn't have the scars in the series. Anyway.
Yeah, and doesn't, like, have much association with Marianne, like, yet. I mean, she doesn't know about the party or anything, because she wasn't in town.
Did she meet her in the bar very, very briefly or something?
Yeah.
And that's a bit, and Sookie, like, read her mind and heard, like, Greek chanting or something, basically.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny and interesting that Daphne and Sam later in the bar when they are going to hook up, they compare notes about being shifters. Like the way that Sookie wanted Barry to compare notes about being a telepath with her and gets completely shut down. Except I think this Daphne and Sam interaction has a lot more sexual undertones than Sookie would have been going for with Barry.
I think the if the equivalent of subtext is text, is the undertones of tones in this case.
Yeah, I mean, like, they literally fuck on a pool table.
Yeah.
And
whomst among us. Yeah.
Well,
sorry, no confessions. It's not a confession podcast. They seem a little bit more chill, and like Sam obviously needs someone who's a little bit more chill, and obviously there are suspicions about Daphne, and she's an incredibly incompetent waitress, which Arlene brings up multiple times, in always in spectacular fashion.
Yeah, it's really funny. I love that they're all definitely hungover at work the next day, and Daphne did not do her closing prep, so she has to do all of it in the morning, which, like, you know, that is just, if you're going to leave early to go to a party and you're also opening, I mean, you're a fool for not doing your closing. Anybody knows that. But Daphne or Arlene gets to give Daphne so much shit about it. And I find it really funny.
We have skipped over the fact that Daphne and Sam, when Daphne is basically saying she knows his secret and that he's a shapeshifter and demonstrates this by turning into a deer and back again, they then get caught by Arlene and Terry hooking up as well. And
Arlene and Terry, OTP!
I mean, I feel like that is about your third or fourth OTP of the show. So
I was just about to make a comment that I know that I do not use the term OTP correctly. It feels to me more as a statement of, like, it's my one true pairing for, like, those people in the pairing. Like, I don't ship Arlene with anybody else. You know what I mean?
Right.
Not that I ship them higher than I ship anyone else.
No.
It's like my OTP. Yeah. It's like,
look,
you know, Harry and Draco.
The strength.
Over Harry and Hermione.
Okay. Wait. No, I'm not going on to that side tangent. That's too much.
Okay, come back.
Yeah. No, English is a language that evolves, and it's a stronger language, all the best for it. So I fully support your redefinition of OTP there.
I just refuse to pick a favorite in any category.
All right. They all say hi to each other by saying each other's names in a sort of Sam, Terry, Arlene. And then Arlene just says Daphne in the flattest, most perfectly... You know, the fact that these people are all high as fuck and she still hates Daphne.
Yes, and they make this comment like, oh, there must be something in the air. And it's like, you're so close. You're so close. I also do want to mention that Sam is 100% shook out of his mind about Daphne being a shifter. And it's like, why? You are one.
Yeah, he says he's never met one before later. Right, he's met werewolves. Spoilers for season 3, I think. But
I mean, there's a werewolf? I think we might have all already knew that in the show, but
yeah.
It's still fun when they sneak those little hints in. There's even more in this episode.
Yes. But yeah. He just needs someone to sort of Daphne feels to me like the Amy to Sam. Sam's Jason, as it were.
Except for Amy was an incredible waitress.
Yes, but an even worse human being.
Yeah, it's true. If you can only be one.
Yeah. The second.
Make that money. No, I'm just kidding.
We haven't started ranking the awfulness of humans on this show. Maybe we should. Or maybe they'll just change from time to time. But Amy is definitely up there with Letty Mae in the most awful humans ranking on the show.
100%. It's very off. It's like so awkward at work for them the next day because they were all making out with each other last night. Yeah. I just love it. It's so awkward. It's such a primed environment for like what happens to them at Merlot's later. Just because they're all having just a not great time. But Lafayette is back.
And it's so depressing.
Yes. Yes, so the sad scenes with Lafayette and Sam are, like, so heartbreaking because Sam's, like, mad at him, but in, like, a loving way, in a way that doesn't really make me mad. It's more so, like, you should have called. We were also worried about you. Also, whatever you're doing probably wasn't safe. You know, there's an element of just trying to have Lafayette take care of himself. And then the noted change in Lafayette's behavior, you know, Sam saying, like, normally you'd be telling me to fuck off. And
it's clear that this is, like, part of a performance that has kind of been played out before. And it's like doing a scene and your partner is just not talking. And you're like, okay, something is wrong here. Yeah, Lafayette's just so quiet. So the exact opposite of Lafayette, right? Like, normally very loud, very bouncy, very short and cutting with his words. And now he's just sort of demure, quiet, sort of basically begs for his job back.
Yeah.
Doesn't want to say anything about anything at all.
Yeah. You know, avoids mentioning. He doesn't even talk up his cover story. Like, he doesn't even really have it in him to...
No. He doesn't explain anything.
Get into any of this at all. Yeah.
And I'm sure, like, that is sensible because, firstly, don't tell Sam shit about what you've done with vampires because Sam can't be trusted with that. And secondly, he's just, you know, he's been through trauma and he doesn't want to talk about it, which, all of which is fair.
Well, and he knows he can't ever be sure when Eric might just pop up.
Yeah.
Yeah, so last but not least in this group of characters, Marianne just wants to move into Sookie's house, and it's so weird. It's so weird. Like, I can see what she's doing. She just wants to be close to Tara, and, like, she wants to be close to Tara, and she wants to see, like, kind of how far she can, like, push her, I think, on this, like, family bond that they're apparently creating. But it's just, like... It's such a weird thing to do that I was, like, appalled that Eggs was like, oh, cool, I can't wait to move in here. And it's like, how do you not see that this is a fucking weird thing to try to do?
Oh, I saw it worse than that. Eggs, so she talks to Eggs earlier about Gran. And then Marianne is later basically cosplaying Gran. So I saw it as
Eggs. Yes, it's so weird.
Eggs told Marianne that. Like, Eggs sells her out. Like, that's what...
Wow. That is even worse.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, it's...
Eggs is not, like, passive in this. Eggs is complicitly in Marianne's thrall or whatever.
Yes.
And he takes even, like, that slight bit of information and feeds it to Marianne to be... so that she can further manipulate Tara. That's how I read it.
Well, that's fucking horrible. And I also did not like him telling Tara, like, oh, we're your real family because we helped you out of a bind one time. Mm. It's like, Sookie and Tara were raised together. And so, like, if they are estranged, if Tara's isolating herself from Sookie, that is, like, something going on with her personally. It has nothing to do with their familial connection.
Yeah, although in the first season as well, we saw Tara basically, like, imprinting on Jason because he helped her out one time.
So it is
in character for her. I mean, it's still horrible. Like, it's another example of people either putting her in situations so that she can be exploited, or, you know, manipulating and exploiting her. It makes your skin crawl, really, watching. I think we spoke in... I was listening to a bit of a first season episode the other day, and we spoke about how parts of season two are properly scary. And I think this, like, this psychological creepiness is properly creepy. Like, for all of the ridiculousness that's going on in the rest of the show, and for all the ridiculousness that is the backdrop of the orgies and the chaos around it, like the manipulation of Tara by Marianne, and also like the torture of Lafayette and what that does to him. Notably, these are our two most prominent black characters as well, right? Is pretty rough watching.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Marianne eventually gets her way because she does a little spell at Merlot's to, like, focus the bad vibes on Tara. Which, you know, ends up pushing her to believing that Marianne and them are her only, you know, people to turn to. So she's going to call Sookie and say, hey, I'm going to have all these randos also living in your grandma's house when you get back.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very clear. Like, what we get in the bar is everyone being angry, and you can see the sort of the hostility building up between everyone and everywhere. But it sort of starts focusing in tighter and tighter on Tara, and it's pretty not fun. Pretty not fun.
Yeah. So Marianne, speaking of other things,
probably not good. Probably not good.
That are not good and not fun. Training to be in God's army, Jason. You're being fucking weird.
It's so weird. I still, like, I said this in the season 2, episode 1. I just find it weird that he goes from going, Eddie was a good guy. It was a human who was the shitty person. I'm not really into this. To actually, I want to be in this church and in this army where literally the whole thing is against vampires. Like, that when we're in this training thing, they've dropped all pretense because the weird drill sergeant is just shouting at them that they're going to be killed by vampires or their family's going to be killed by vampires the whole time. I just still think it's weird. Even Jason, a lovable douchebag, I just find it weird that he's really, I don't know, it feels like they were trying to establish some character growth in him through season 1, and how he would be impacted by Amy, both positively and negatively, and Eddie positively and negatively, and it just seems like they kind of went, all right, but it's more fun now if we put him in this church army thing.
Yeah, it's like the plan was always to have him ingrained in this church, and I feel like they probably kept up him talking about his, you know, feelings around Amy and Renee and his feelings about what happened with Eddie, like, just to remind us longer that, like, oh, this is Jason. We do love this person. Like, there is goodness in there. Yeah. And, like, also he's doing this other thing. But I do sort of feel like that gap isn't, like, the most effectively bridged, because we do basically go, from what I can remember, from Jason and Sarah talking about like how Eddie was a good person, and she says he wasn't a person, and, you know, that's like basically the last conversation we have about, like, the ideology. I feel like, until, I mean, maybe just getting picked special and getting to stay in the house is just like enough.
Yeah. And he sort of has this sort of fixation on Sarah, which he sort of tries to play off as this you know, a weird sort of holiness aspect to it. I don't know. I think you're right. Like, we had to do that so that we didn't spend this whole season going, well, Jason is a hateful person. Why the hell would we ever care about anything that happens to him? His response to a human killing a vampire is fuck the vampires. Right. But yeah, he's still getting woken up early, getting shouted at, getting told to do push-ups. Luke is also told to do push-ups, so Jason obviously has to do one-armed push-ups, which are really fucking hard to do, so fair play, Ryan Quinson.
I mean, Jason is just so much better than Luke. He's physically better than Luke, and he's also, like, a better person than Luke. In a group of people who have all determined that we are just going to go around murdering vampires, there are still levels to, like, how good of a person somebody is, apparently, because they're going to lengths to show us that, like, Jason is, like, leading with compassion and encouragement, and, like, look how, like, good Jason's doing at this activity, and, like, look how shitty Luke is at it.
The drill sergeant is so weird, though. Like, it's such a, like, he's like a Starship Troopers drill sergeant. Up to and including all of the, like, comparing everyone to women and saying, ladies, blah, blah, blah. Except that, like, at least a quarter of the people there are women. Like, it's not just men being trained. So it just is weird. Like, I mean, it's obviously fucking stupid anyway, but it just came across as weird. that he's doing that stuff. But you know, he is a character actor playing a drill sergeant from a movie, basically, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's sort of weird that like Sarah's even at this practice. I mean, maybe she's like the more bloodthirsty one between her and Steve, and so she has interest in being there, which I would buy. And like, the men are fit, and we know Sarah likes a hot man. So
I definitely think she's thirsty. I'm not sure it's blood that she's thirsty.
Sarah and Steve are having trouble in paradise. She's mad that she's being like left out of things, and I mean, that is very traditional. And Steve is making, like, you have these in the notes, like, Steve is making these like old school, like, oh, take my wife, like, get her off my hands, like that type of thing. But like, Sarah is the one that grills. And, like, Sarah is the one that writes the speeches. So, from some perspectives, they're practicing, like, non-traditional gender roles in their household. And
yeah.
So, it tracks that she's the one that's at military camp.
Yeah. She's unhappy that stuff is going further and quicker than she thinks is sensible. Basically, that they're taking risks, which I think is... we'll probably touch on this later because it ties in. I think it's implicit that they've done stuff with the vampires and are trying to do kidnappings and stuff in ways that are perhaps a little riskier than they should be doing, and that it's going to expose them to liability or to attack, basically. Anyway, her Jason comes back in. Sarah says, "What a good job Jason did." With his push-ups and his climbing over fences and hauling Luke over them, and his showing basic compassion to a bank manager who's a fascist who fell over. And and Steve is like, "Yeah, I heard you did great. Now let me show you my room full of guns," which are definitely not implicit for anything.
Yeah, they have like a full arsenal, and he is fucking giddy about it. I mean, it's weird.
Yeah. He does have to explain to Jason what a guillotine is. So,
yeah, and it's definitely not weird. Like, I don't understand it. It's like weirdo behavior, and I judge you if you're like this, is what I mean.
Yeah. It is interesting how Steve and Sarah interact, because there's very little tactile between the two of them.
Yes.
And this goes into, like, spoilers that we've mentioned previously, but given that lack of, you know, of touch between them, given the way that basically when she's putting Jason's bib on in one of the earlier episodes and Steve is just not paying any attention, always Steve's focus is always on Jason when she's grilling, and Jason is like fantasizing about her spanking her ass with a spatula.
She's like legit drooling.
Yeah, like Steve is not paying any attention to her whatsoever. So yeah. So she decides to take things into her own hands, so to speak.
And also, literally. yeah, because God wants Jason to have a reward. And I really feel like Sarah thinks God wants Sarah to have a reward. But, like, I respect it either way.
I mean, I think Sarah wants Sarah to have a reward. I think she's also doing it because she's pissed off with Steve. But
yeah, exactly.
But I feel like she's been plotting this for quite some time, which is, you know, how you have to organize hand jobs in bathtubs, I guess. A very milky bathtub.
Yeah. It's funny that when she opens the door, Jason's like, he says something like super like flippant and like, you know, it's not like, you know, get out, but it's basically like that. And I was like, you are in someone's house and you know you're the only person who's not them in the house. Like, who are you responding to this way when they open the door?
Yeah. His initial reaction is, oh no, but you're so pure and this wouldn't be right. And then that lasts for approximately a minute, if that.
Yeah. I mean, at one point, I don't remember like exactly what she asks him, like, verbatim, but she basically says like, are you cool with this? And he says like, no. And she's like, are you sure? And he's like, or she's like, do you mean that? And he's like, well, obviously fucking no, but like, I'm at church camp, I'm trying to like do the right thing, can you throw me a bone here? Phrasing.
Boom. Anyway, That's as much as we get of Jason and the Newlands this episode. It's still weird that he's there, but we're getting back to classic Jason hygiene.
Yes, which is banging. And yeah, so now we have like our vampire gang. Well, it's really just a gang doing vampire stuff because obviously Sookie is a human. And she is just deeply offended that Barry the Bellboy does not want to be friends with her. And he's made it very clear that he doesn't want to be friends with her because he thinks that being friends with her and talking about this would be bad for his personal safety. And the fact that she is just beside herself about this and will not let it go is so Sookie. And I do not mean that as a compliment.
She's very Sookie.
And she eventually, from what we can tell, there's maybe something else going on, and I truly don't remember if we ever find out, but she won't leave him alone at work until he quits. Like, we hope that, like, the worst that happened to him was that he quit his job. And then she's like, Bill, I'm so mad because Barry the Bellboy doesn't want to be my telepath friend. And then Bill's also annoyed with her. Like, why would you tell somebody else you're a telepath? Like, what are you doing?
Someone who works at a vampire hotel as well. Like, it's
yeah.
It is, I mean, okay, first thing first, Barry is apparently really scared of what vampires would do to him. Why
if
is he working
knew,
for
yeah.
them? Like, why? Like,
so I think he's working there because he's like,
to shut
Sookie makes a couple comments about how like she can teach him to control it. Yeah. And it seems like he just like really can't handle being around like brains the way Sookie can. So I figured he was just working for the vampires because it was quiet in there and he could act normal. And as long as he acts completely normal and pretends that he's glamored when it happens, then he can just live. This is like the closest he can get to a normal life until he meets Sookie and she ruins it for him.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's still, if you're that scared of them, you're like living very close to discovery all the time. Like one time that you're glamored and you don't like obviously do what you should be doing when you're glamored and you're done for, which you would be all the time working at that hotel where definitely people die. Like,
yes. Yes. I mean, I do not think that Barry, like, I would like more out of life for Barry. But, like, if he doesn't want to talk about this at work, then Sookie should respect that. And it just, like,
it's just also, like, Sookie is also, ever since she got off the plane with having had 10 miniature bottles of vodka or whatever, she has been so giddy.
She's on one.
She is. And I'll be honest, Dallas Sookie is fun.
I love Dallas Sookie's like yellow outfit she's wearing when she gets off the plane. Like, I obviously have to say that.
She's got great outfits. She's drinking. She's looking at porn and then going, oh, porn. How disgusting. when Bill is like, she's talking with Jessica. She's, you know, shouting at vampires for being stupid. It's a lot of fun. I am enjoying, and she's horny as fuck as well. It's very.
I was just about to say, she is so horny. She cannot be satisfied. Like, I love this for Sookie. Like, the hotel horn is so real. And I love her telling Bill, like, you're not like the other vamps. I bet you say that's all your vampire boyfriends.
Jessica sadly had her snack in every sense of the word taken away from her by Bill, who got back just in time to send away her B negative boy that she'd ordered to the room, and he just orders her to have True Blood, and she does a great flounce and storm off and say private space into her room. Well,
private. Keep out. I love it. It's so teenagery and just funny. And she goes in there to call Hoyt and they're so cute on the phone. I literally can't deal with it. I cannot deal with it.
He answers the phone without knowing who it is, which is a weird thing to say, 10 plus years later. But he answers it by going, you're talking to the man. And I'm like, oh, Hoyt, I don't believe you.
She's like, Hoyt?
You might not remember me. It's Jessica Henley.
He's
very cute. And then his mom tries to storm in and say, it's not ladylike to be calling at this time of night.
Oh my God. Like, Hoyt's mom sucks. Relax, Maxine. But I love, just physical acting of Hoyt, like, trying to get her to be quiet, trying to get her out of the room so he can, like, cuddle up and talk to Jessica on the phone. And he's like, I can tell you about my comic book, which, when Ben and I were dating long distance, he would sometimes tell me about his comic books on the phone. So that was very cute.
That is extremely cute. Oh, you're the Hoyt and Jessica.
I know.
That's very cute. Yeah, I can see that about Ben. Mind you, when Ben and I met, we were very cute about comic books as well. So there you go.
You guys were. It's true.
Yes. My note is this, but I say this with all possible English decorum. Squee.
Yeah. So appropriate. So earned. It's just adorable. I mean, I just continue to die over them. Yeah, and I mean, Bill and Sookie are having a good time too. Other than, like, outside of the horniness, on top of the horniness, included with the horniness is these, like, nice, just like regular partner conversations where she's like, you need to tell me, like, what is going on. You are acting worked up, and I would like to know what the deal is. And Bill is being so weird because Eric is being so weird. Yeah.
But he says that, like, and that's, the worst thing on TV is, like, manufactured tension between people who just could talk about things. And I do appreciate that, like, whilst that does happen from time to time with Bill and Sookie, at least they seem to be growing a bit more and having a little bit more open conversations from both sides about this. I mean, they're still both weird. Like, I don't feel like this is imbalanced weirdness and withholding. Like, they're both equally as weird with each other about everything. Mm-hmm. Albeit Sookie does just go around telling people, like, she's a telepath too.
Sookie, I mean, not everyone is having the best day of their fucking life every day in Dallas.
She definitely is. Yeah.
Yeah, and we find out why Eric is being so weird. Basically, because Bill goes to Eric and is like, bro.
What's up?
The jig is up. You have to tell me why you're being so weird. And it's because we get this flashback. Flashbacks! How fun! and Godric is Eric's maker.
Yeah. Because
he saw him on the battlefield and thought he was, like, a cool guy. And so he's like, let's, like, be very dramatically connected now. Because Godric said, Eric asks if Godric is death, and Godric says, like, yeah, do you want to be my companion? And that is just, like, so poetic and, like, deeply dramatic. No wonder Eric still rides so hard for this guy.
There's some pretty good vampire fanfic being written right now on the show about the two of them. So Godric is speaking German, and I'm pretty sure Eric is speaking Swedish, but they can kind of understand each other, which I find fun. It's not, none of that is explained. I just have sufficient smatterings of both of those to be like, hang on a second, that is German,
okay,
and that is not. And yeah, so
I wonder how those choices ended up. Do you think that those are just the languages that those men on set knew? And they were like, yeah, I mean, we're not going to subtitle it. It's fine.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, Sarsgaard's obviously is
Or I mean,
Swedish.
Like, we're not going to subtitle, like, what the languages
are.
What
the languages, yeah. I don't know who the actor who plays Godric actually is. But he's still got, like, runic tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
But he's speaking, I mean, they're also speaking modern versions of these languages, which obviously they wouldn't mm-hmm. have been doing however many thousands of years ago. But yeah, I just thought it was, I found it really interesting the way that they did that. Eric has been injured in the battle. He's been carried away by a couple of his mates, basically. They tell some jokes. They're very gallowsy humor. And then basically Godric turns up, kills his men, but was so impressed stroke lusty about Eric on the battlefield, that he offers him life. He's shirtless. Don't know why he's shirtless, but no complaints. He's got very cool
tattoos.
Gotta
show off that art.
Yeah. And he offers him life, and he says, "I'll be your father, your brother, your son." And I think there's perhaps a word missing out from there that we can all.
It's very sexual.
Very sexual. So yeah, he offers him the choice, and Eric takes it, which I think is interesting because it's not always the case.
Yeah. Eric. And I just like love this, that now we know this about Eric, that like he has this maker. They don't spend like, you know, day to day time together, but he still loves him so much that he would like throw off his entire life to like go to Dallas, drag a bunch of people he knows into it, and then be so weird that Bill finally has to be like, "What is the deal?"
Yeah. Yeah, it's
he's distraught. It's nice.
So they're at a house in Dallas, which is like a fancy house with what I would describe as Eurotrash vampires, but they may not be Euro. they're like slightly rich, somewhat powerful, but somewhat obnoxious as well about things. They're very, one of them wants to go and basically kill everyone at the church. The other one is like, "That will cause the government to blow us up. We can't do that. It's not what we're supposed to be doing." And one's like, "No, we should go back to the Middle Ages." And you're like, and you could see that. So he's the man dressed as a cowboy vampire. And she's just like, "Why don't you fuck off back to Romania if that's how you want to feel?" So, yeah, it was. I don't remember either of those vampires' names, but they were a nice little addition. And Eric basically loses fully all of his patience with them and is clearly very stressed. Then we find out about the maker, and then they're still bickering. And then Sookie loses all of her patience with them as well. And it's like, right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do this, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this. And they're all like...
Yeah, she's going to infiltrate the Fellowship of the Sun, which is going to be so easy and chill until she runs into her idiot brother.
Yeah. And... yeah, and Bill is like, "This is a terrible idea." And Eric is like, "Nope, it's going to happen." Tough.
This is a great idea.
Yeah.
Couldn't have written it better myself. So oh, wait. Bill
so Bill is like, "Okay, well, let's go back to our room and I'll tell you why it's a terrible idea. And then maybe let's just get distracted with a little bit more fucking." Because he
can
stay with...
Yeah, she's like, "How about we don't talk about how my ideas are bad? That's not what we're going to do."
We can stay, and it's, you know, it's you
my ideas are amazing, and so is my lingerie.
yeah, so.
We get, like, this spooky little, like, visual walkthrough of the hotel, and then we get to see this woman who is walking in the hallway, and there's, like, hallway wind in her hair, because that is how dramatic and, like, powerful this woman is walking down the hallway. And she's, like, listening to them, and she's hearing, like, the moaning through the doorway, and that's Bill's maker, and that is a cliffhanger. Dun-dun-dun.
Yep. Dun-dun-dun. Yes. Yes, there is the briefest glimpse into what Jessica must have heard when she was in the other room. Like,
oh,
Jessica,
the rooms are soundproof. That's like a feature of the vampire hotel, so Jessica is spared for once.
No, I meant for once I meant back at the old conference place.
When Sookie's like, "Oh, Jessica," like, whatever. Okay,
right, that's our cliffhanger.
I feel like this is like a middle of the pack cliffhanger, because it is excited to know that this is going to get even more emotionally fraught and dramatic. But, you know, that's it. That's the reveal.
Yeah.
You thought that this was emotionally fraught and dramatic enough? It's not.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. We now have 16 episodes ranked in terms of cliffhangers. Mm-hmm. Our number one is Grant is dead. Our number 16 is Bill is biting Sookie during sex, which wasn't really a cliffhanger.
It was the most predictable thing in the world.
So I'm feeling like this is below Sam is the dog on the bed.
Yeah, I think so. Because the reveal that we have, or not the reveal, the cliffhanger that's right above Sam is Dean the dog is Sookie going to Bill's house and finding like Weird Eyes back tattoo vampire who now has a name that I've already forgotten again.
Didn't he die? He's dead now anyway, so he's just Weird Eyes back tattoo vampire.
Rip. It's basically the same like flavor of reveal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And Weird Eyes back tattoo vampire is scary, so that's a better cliffhanger.
So do you think this is above or below Sam is Dean the dog?
I think it's above.
Okay.
Because we were waiting for Sam to be Dean the dog canonically. And I can't say that I was waiting for Bill's maker to show up, but it was always kind of a possibility. And yeah, this is really just a cliffhanger reveal of like,
I think it's exactly,
you thought everyone was acting weird already.
I think you're right. I think like Sam being the dog is foreshadowed, and Bill's maker showing up is also foreshadowed in that we got to see her in his scene earlier in the season, and then there was a lot of talk about makers in this episode as well. So yeah. Okay, so this is our number 12, which is Bill's maker shows up whilst they're shagging.
Never ending cliffhangers.
Well, I think they will end. I think that,
yeah. Oh my god, what if the finale had one? That would be so fun.
I really hope it does. I really hope so. Right, sweet. Okay.
Yeah, character intros. I mean, I wrote Barry, and I know we kind of met him in the last episode. I really just wanted to like list him as a character somewhere officially in case he comes back.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun that there's more telepaths. It's curious that he was so worked up about this that he quit his job. So we'll see.
Yeah, he looks very much like Blancmange, and he acted very much like Blancmange. So I don't really care about Barry at this point, other than just how hyper Sookie was about him.
And we meet the Dallas vampires, which I think might have names, but I couldn't be fucked to look them up. And I was like, maybe they shouldn't go on the character list if I can't remember their names. But we met them. They were a little unhinged. So,
yep. If they come back, we promise to work out your names. Sort of Euro/Latin trash vampires. Dallas vampires.
And then we meet Godric.
Yeah.
Who we have.
He's cute.
He's cute. We know that him and Eric have a really intense connection. And Eric is very distraught about him being missing. And I just like the things we know about Godric are that Eric, what's the word I'm looking for? Like venerates him, maybe.
Yeah.
But Eric is obsessed with him.
You're like obsessed with him. He's yeah.
That's what Godric's gonna say when we find him.
We've never seen Eric lose his cool before, and he does because Godric's in trouble. So,
but it's interesting because how did Godric get captured?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how is this person that Eric feels this way about and is saying these things about also a person who has been kidnapped? So that's curious.
2,000 years old as Sookie. Sookie's reaction to finding out that he's 2,000 years old is to mouth 2,000 years old to Bill.
Sookie, I mean, they should take her to Dallas more often.
To be fair, I feel like Sookie should live in Dallas. I think it suits her better, and she doesn't have to work for Sam, and her and Bill can like just fuck in a vampire hotel the whole time. It would be great.
They can just live in the hotel.
To be clear, we haven't met Godric in present day. We've only met him in flashback.
No, we haven't. At this point. And this doesn't count as character intros, but I do want to mention just like the fact that the world opened up a little bit in terms of what characters could be introduced in someday, because they were mentioned in this episode of both a vampire king and a vampire queen.
Those have come up before, to be fair.
Okay. I don't remember them from before.
I remember them purely because I think last episode, which you probably haven't listened to yet, I think I said...
And I already told you I was combining them together in my mind.
When we talked about it, I went, oh yeah, and they mentioned like the Vampire King and Queen. And Elise was like, yeah, I think they mentioned them before. So we're just we're handing this riff off between us.
How many episodes is this going to happen? Okay, great. Yeah, so that's why it's the Chaos Podcast.
Yeah. speaking of chaos.
What is most chaotic in this episode?
So weirdly, neither of us have written anything on this. I guess it's the chaos in Molot's when everyone's shouting at Tara and all over the place.
But yeah, it's got to be that. And also like Sookie in the hotel, just Sookie in the hotel is a little chaos monster.
Sookie in general, I think, is possibly the most chaotic in this episode. She's shouting at telepaths. She's telling them she's also a telepath, even though she knows this is a bad thing to do. She's shouting at very old vampires because she feels bulletproof, you know.
So yeah, and then I mean, most horny for me is like also Sookie in the hotel.
She does say to Bill, I want you every which way, which is lovely touch. I will say Sarah Annekamp Newlin and literally just going in to the bathroom, very ornate, large bathroom as well, and giving Jason a hand job. And also a special mention for Sam and Daphne, who are discussing how shifting makes them hot and they run a little hotter because they're shifters. Anyway, they get naked and Sam is like, well, I'm just going to say it. Nice rack. And she responds with nice balls. And I'm like,
I had to facepalm. That was nearly worse than give me something sweet. Because Sam is like, I feel like Sam says something like, are you going to say it or should I? And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Because why would Daphne say that?
Like, genuinely, it feels like a happy endings joke where Sam would then just hold up a couple of balls or something like that.
Yeah, it's so weird. I mean, I'm happy for them that they found each other, I guess. I don't know, whatever. If I owned a bar, I'd fuck a pool table too.
They are both dumbass, useless trash people who are bad at their jobs. So all the best to them.
More power to you.
So you said you caught up with the books. So anything book related that you want to bring up at this point?
Not really. I know that Elise has mentioned that like the kidnapping plot went a little bit different. Yeah, I mean, there's just so much less of the plot in the book. So most of what's going on is just streamlined Sookie stuff. So I feel like I'm like not that far into the book yet.
Okay. I think the only other thing, and we mentioned this earlier, is there is werewolf talk, and those werewolves will definitely show up later.
Oh, I actually do have something to say about the book. In the book...
I'm glad that you're not going to be dramatic about it.
Yes, you're so welcome. In the book, Sookie goes to Sam to warn him about the Maenad, and he like laughs hysterically at her for some undetermined reason, and then he kisses her on the fucking mouth, and it's like, I'm so glad the show's moved on from this. Like, fuck. And Sookie's like kind of into it, but she's like with Bill. So when Bill comes to the bar later, in her mind, she's like, oh my God, I can't believe I kissed someone else earlier. And it's like, whatever. It's so weird.
Yes.
And this one is that I didn't mention this in the main like body of the episode, which is that the vampire hotel in the show is called Hotel Carmilla, which I think is an amazing touch. Carmilla, the teen girl vampire, an older vampire story than Dracula. Amazing. Incredible. We love it. And
wait. Okay. I have never heard of this before, and I would, I'm going to say that I'm not the only person. So would you give a very quick précis?
Yeah. So Carmilla is, I believe, the first like vampire story. So it was published in 1872. It's a novella. I cannot pronounce this author's name. Sheridan Le Fanu. And it's one of the earliest works of vampire fiction. It predates Bram Stoker's Dracula by 25 years, and it is about a teen girl vampire. And I know about this because there was a movie adaptation of it that I saw at, I believe, the 2018 Chicago International Film Festival. And that is written and directed by Emily Harris. And I recommend that movie wholeheartedly. I love that movie. It's great. So the Carmilla shout out on the hotel in the episode, I was very excited about. Not excited enough to put it in the main body of the notes, mind you, but I was excited.
Wonderful. No, I'd never heard of this before. So Sheridan Le Fanu is Irish. Yeah, this is set in Styria in the 19th century. I'm going to look this up. Thank you very much for that.
Great. You're so welcome. I'm so pleased. Yeah. Right. And it's just called like the Silent Shore Hotel or something in the book. Just like something not interesting.
Right. A lovely touch there. Okay. Are we done for the episode? Any sort of closing thoughts on it?
Yeah. No, I think we did it.
Yeah. Yeah. As I said, I think at the top, I think it was after the previous one, a little bit less chaotic. Actually almost as horny, which is tough to say compared to possibly one of the horniest episodes of TV
I've
ever seen. Suki in Dallas continues to be an absolute delight. And Suki not speaking to Sam is also a delight, frankly. All right. Do you want to do some plugs?
Yeah. You can find me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Mellow Yellow, and I also occasionally make podcast content with Wild Pretty Things.
Awesome. You can find me on Blue Sky at Lozymandias. You can find my podcast Asimovcast, looking for joy and inspiration in Isaac Asimov. I should around about now have the first episode of season 2 coming out, which will be about the first chapter of the book Foundation called The Psycho Historians. So if Melissa is interested in that after watching the show, she can listen to.
Okay. Well, you know, thank you for listening. Thanks very much to DJ Empirical for our theme song. It fucking rules. You can find the pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Bang Bangers Pod with a Z, and email us your chaotic, horny thoughts on True Blood, please, to bangbangerspod@gmail.com, and that is also with a Z.
I'm Lozzy, and my blood type is Dein Vater, Dein Bruder, Dein Sohn.
And I'm Melissa, and my blood type is bathtub handjobs.
Bye.
Bye.